Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, everybody? This is Andrew Morgans, the founder of Marknology, here on the Startup Hustle, talking all things e-commerce, digital marketing, and everything involved. Excited to bring today's guest to you. Tyler's a friend of mine as well as a colleague. He was with me in the early days when I was trying to build Marknology and helping me kind of solve a problem. And it's just been kind of cool to follow each other's journey through the years. We've touched base a couple of times just to shoot the shit and see what's going on in his world and mine, being digital nomads, entrepreneurs. When you meet a real one, you try to stay connected. Before we get started, I think this is going to be today's sponsor is a good one for today's show. You know them, Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. We're going to talk about, you know, some software as a service stuff, getting one started, how to avoid mistakes, and you know, conversations all the time, whether in e-commerce, product sales, service based, there's software needs that you have. And as we get more digital every single day, it becomes more and more of a necessity to get things done. Tyler, welcome to the show.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I know it was last minute. You know, I emailed you a few days ago. I was like, hey, I want to get on.
You meet so many people, you know, especially in the agency world. And, you know, I'm always thinking e-commerce, but there's so many aspects to really what that is. And when you reached out thinking about Tableau, thinking about, you know, the dashboards I'm building now, I'm spending thousands a month, you know, including my last episode with Sam, using, you know, Dash applications to do some of my software needs. And I remember even with Tableau, we were using like CSVs and Excel sheets, you know, trying to get this stuff done in the early days. So, it's good to have you. Like, let's start a little bit with your backstory, if you don't mind. You know, tell everybody a little bit about Visual Intelligence. You know, if that's your first company, I know it's at least your current company. Yeah. And what got you here?
Yeah. So, I mean, you want to go like all the way back to college days?
Let's start like, you know, yeah, from college on, yeah. Like what you went to school for.
So my kind of going to college, I kind of already had the thought of being an entrepreneur. Right. But you need a fallback plan. Right. So I kind of, in college, I went to school for, it's called actual science, which is, I was supposed to be an actuary. So it's like a statistician for healthcare. And then I had a minor in finance and statistics, and then I went to do my MBA in finance. So I started off doing healthcare analytics. And that was like, I mean, analytics in general, you know, you're golden, right? So, you know, doing analytics, I jumped around. I went to a startup for about 6 months, and I was just like, man, this is way too much work for what they pay me, right? They gave me a cell phone. They were like, hey, we got a meeting at 5:30. I was like, hey, I got to pick up my kids. No. And so that didn't work out. And then I went to another global travel management company, and that's where I picked up Tableau. And me, I have a similar background as you. My dad's a professional painter. He's a dean of the art school. You know, I went to school for analytics, and then I have an MBA in business. So I have that weird mixture of, you know, analytics. I can program, I can do SAS and SQL and Tableau. I have that the artistic graphic design kind of thing because I grew up, you know, with you know, painting as a dad. And then I am just business because I'm business savvy and I went to school. So, and with Tableau is kind of one of those things where you need to know business and you need to be able to talk to people and get the understanding of what's going on. You need the analytics and you need to make it pretty, right? So I started using Tableau in there and it just like, I just caught on super fast. So I started doing freelancing kind of at night. And after about 3 or 4 months of doing freelancing, I made whatever I was making in my corporate freelancing. So I was just like, all right, forget it. And so I made the jump. And I ended up making my employer a contract, which I don't know how that happened, but I ended up.
I tried that. It didn't work. They said, no, I think their feelings were hurt, but
yeah.
I did say, hey, like, I won't leave you high and dry. Like, I'll continue to, like, you know, manage this. I just want to do more. So good for you.
Yeah. So
and hey, before you go on further, can, like, for anyone listening, you know, this is a show by founders for founders. Sometimes we're talking, you know, we can start talking our world, our tech speak a little bit and leave some people behind, you know, but for anyone that's kind of a novice listener to data analytics, what is Tableau?
Yeah. So Tableau is a data visualization tool. So you know how you got Excel, everybody's used Excel, you got the crosstabs, right? Everyone loves, especially old school, right? Now kind of the trend in the last 10 years or so is creating like dashboards. So interactive dashboards, infographics, you know, the nice, pretty interactive charts that you usually see. Like I've been doing a lot of COVID ones. So I did one for the state of Tennessee, showing all of their COVID cases and doing all of that. So now, you know, especially executives, they're tired of crosstabs. They want to see, I call it nice, pretty paintings of data, right? And Tableau is the leading data visualization tool. It's kind of top two are Tableau and Microsoft Power BI, but Tableau is leading to me all together. So yeah, it's a dashboarding tool is what it does.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to like create a baseline. So if we keep talking sure. it, people like, are like, okay, this is a dashboard tool, a high-end dashboard tool.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's a high-end dashboarding and data analytics tool. So it's kind of on the trend, you know, I mean, it is, I mean, it's bought by Salesforce. So it's a huge tool, you know, but it's kind of still growing, you know, Excel is the old school one. This is kind of the new trend going on. So kind of go back to story. So I started freelancing and I started on like Upwork and Elance, you know, the platforms where you hire all the freelancers from around
same
the world.
Same as I.
Yep. And then I got to the point where, you know, building the website, started doing marketing, started doing YouTubes. And it got to the point where now I just get clients contacting me and I don't even have to do it no more. But it kind of, I mean, just like, you know, with consulting, it even though you own your own business, it still feels like a job, right? So the last few years I've been developing a software because just the business model. I love the business model of being able to, you know, create something once and then scale it, sell it to people, have, you know, virtual assistants do your support, tickets or whatever. And, you know, all you got to focus on is kind of marketing aspect of it. And you can even outsource that, right? But it's fully scalable. And I could just, you know, walk away, sit on the beach and chill and still make money without my time being connected to money, right? Everybody's dream. So I'm trying to switch into that, even though, you know, I mean, my consulting business is doing fine, but like I said, I still feel like it's work. And I'm trying to get to that next level now, which is where, you know, I built the software as a service and that's kind of where I'm trying to get to now.
No, I love it. And I know we've talked back and forth about ways we can work together. And for anyone listening, my story is very similar. Was working in corporate as e-commerce manager, was in school, you know, was traveling as a musician, but had my plan B, which is computer science, and then started freelancing when I had my corporate job out of school and got a few clients and then left. And, you know, that's what me and Tyler have had in common and turned into consultants. I think the difference in path was, you know, with my family, I wanted to build something, you know, so I started going the agency route and, you know, hiring people under me to know how to do what I do and that kind of thing. But in the space that I'm in regards to Amazon, e-commerce, let's just broaden it. You know, in regards to e-commerce, there's so many needs for understanding. You know, I'm trying to bridge the gap from what I know how to do as, let's say, a digital construction worker to the owners of these brands or the operators of these brands. And dashboards is a great way to do that. You know, it essentially allows me to tell a story to them versus talking numbers in Excel. You know, so for me, dashboards have been on my radar for years. And Amazon is just now, you know, like my last podcast with Sam, Amazon is just now allowing us to have this data from an API, you know, instead of Excel downloads and be able to essentially port it in. Super, super important. And, you know, something else like besides, I want to get into the software conversation, but staying here kind of on visual intelligence and what you do right now and why it's so important. I went to Goldman Sachs 10KSB earlier this year. You know, I got signed up in January pre-COVID and, you know, things changed as the year went along, but it was a fantastic program with Goldman Sachs at Babson College in Boston for a small business accelerator. And one major takeaway that I came away with was not just looking to build dashboards for my clients so I can help them tell a story about what we're working on from an agency perspective, but how do I build a dashboard that tells me how Marknology is doing as a service-based company, as an agency? And because, you know, the tech space is kind of the Wild West and the final frontier that there is, everything is evolving constantly. And a lot of the software that we use doesn't have a way of connecting with all the other software. It just got made, right? It just got made. So I use all these different tools in my business and have been working to build a dashboard that tells me the health of my business, you know, as an agency. Where's a central spot I can look at without needing to open QuickBooks, without needing to open my project management software, without needing to open my time tracking, without having one-on-one conversations with all my employees and hoping I'm getting honest conversations from them as managers. Like, where's somewhere that I can go and take a look and be like, okay, this is my baseline and we're up or we're down from that baseline, and know quickly, you know, how my business is doing. That is just, I'm obsessing about it.
Yeah, no, for sure. And kind of going back to your original comment of you know, the different routes we took with, you know, you building the agency. I had those thoughts too. I mean, cause you know, especially being a consultant, it's either I increase my rates or I put people under me, right? And when I tried it, it's like I said, Tableau's such, to me, I see it as art. Like it's an art platform, you know, because you give 10 people the Excel file and tell them to build a dashboard, you're going to get 10 completely different things. So trying to train someone how to think like you in art is very challenging. You know, it was almost like they build it and I'd be like I would have painted it like this. Right. And then, so it got to the point where it was like, man, like I can do that, but it's almost more work of trying to teach someone how you would think how to paint. Cause it's creative. You know, I couldn't really come up with a process and be like, I would do it this way. Cause I don't even know what the hell I'm gonna do until I do it, you know? So that's where the software, the service came. But I mean, like you said, even the software, the service, it connects data. It kind of hits that middle point, because what the software does is it looks at it. So it's to create survey dashboards. But there's in the market research industry, there's, you know, all these survey platforms, SurveyMonkey, Qualtrics, you know, SurveyGizmo, all that. And a lot of them are trying to get it into a data visualization tool. But that middle ground of getting that data from the survey platforms to the data visualization tool is not there. And it's very hard to, especially with survey data, is just ugly. You know what I mean? Like the structure of multiple choice and open ended, like all of that is just nasty when it comes to data visualization or data analytics in general. So my tool is kind of that middle point that kind of can talk to the survey platforms and get it into the BI platforms. But like you said, I think the biggest, I mean, probably after I figure out how to get this one going, the next software, I'm going to stay with software, because it's like I said, I love that business model, but it's going to be around, like you said, connecting data from all these different sources and putting it in an easy to use, you know, dashboard or template that can tell you kind of everything. Cause yeah, I agree. That's definitely what most businesses are missing right now.
Data is everything. Like if you don't have data, I don't think you can improve your business. I think at that point you're slinging mud against the wall and hoping it sticks. I agree with you on the art and science part. You know, a lot of times when I'm talking to clients, I'm talking to them about Amazon and e-commerce and, you know, some of what we're doing, the SEO research and different things and these keywords, and being like, it's a little bit of art. It's a little bit of science. It's a little bit of, you know, magic with photos and copywriting. It's a little bit of like, you know, data tracking and analysis. And I personally think I'm a data scientist and a business strategist. Yeah. You know, I and it's been you know, it really is hard to teach. And at the beginning, it was, you know, my sister moving here with a master's in engineering from Tampa to believe in what I was doing and come sit down next to me and just watch and watch for 3 years, 4 years now, right? And she's not sitting over my shoulder. She's running things herself. But like, that's what it took at the beginning. And if you don't, I mean, that's a family member that's close to me that, you know, we're almost like twins in some ways. So maybe that was my magic, right? Was getting someone a lot like me to kind of think like me.
Because a lot of it's personality traits. I mean, either you have it or you don't, you know, and the same thing with tablets. I can just look at your dashboards and tell you if you have it or not. And as far as, you know, what I want. Because I mean, some stuff you just can't train. I mean, it's innovation, it's creativity, it's problem solving. You either have that or you don't. I mean, it's not a bad or good thing. It's just you have something better, you know. I agree. And probably being related, she has probably a lot of the same thinking processes that you have.
Yeah, that's what it took. And I mean, and honestly, we've had a little bit of turnover here at Marknology, not in a bad way. You know, as we go in, we're going through a pandemic. E-commerce is in, like, literally the highest demand for services that it's ever been. I mean, if you guys get on any kind of job platform, it's just e-commerce. And some of our people have gotten poached by bigger agencies, the New York, you know, East Coast, West Coast. And that's what happens when you train people to know how to, you know, how to do what you do. You know, you kind of am faced with that too. So there's always issues there. I think I'm kind of doing it in reverse, and that's typical Andrew Morgan's, just like, you know, doing things sometimes the hard way, but also like, you know, maybe being a front runner and then learning, hey, I need to take a couple steps back, you know? And for me, that's where, being able to market the software, you know, I feel like if I release a software or a dashboard software or anything proprietary, it will be after I already have an agency and exposure and can sell it in that way, you know, but it is something very top of mind. And as I'm getting the experience year after year after year, I feel like I get a great understanding for what's needed and what's missing and what all these brands are missing and what they want. So having a lot of fun doing that. Like, how far are you along in this software build? Like, you know, do you have a prototype?
Yeah, no, actually, I launched it this year, but
okay.
It's so, I'll give you, so this is what you shouldn't do, okay?
let's talk about this.
So, you know, being a data visualization, you know, expert, right? I was just starting to get these survey projects coming in, right? And it was just a tedious process of cleaning the survey data and creating these dashboards, right? I had to kind of learn to figure out how to clean it, how to get in the right structure. And then I had to create these dashboards from scratch every time. So I was working with a company, I was doing a couple of months. And I was like, all right, man, like, it got to a point where I was like, I don't even want this contract no more. Like, it was that bad. I was in Excel, just manipulating data and changing data. Then, you know, Excel, you mess up once.
This isn't easy.
You know, you're like, oh, damn, what did I do? You know, and you got to start all over. So then I started using, you know, like ETL tools, like automation tools, like Alteryx and different things, automate it. And then I was like, man, well, if I'm having this problem, you know, thinking like an entrepreneur, somebody else is having this problem, right? Mm-hmm. So then I started developing the tools internally and kind of using them as a project. And then I got...
Now all of a sudden this problem, not to cut you off, but all of a sudden this problem becomes an opportunity, right?
Exactly.
Because you're like, hey, this thing is like driving me crazy, but I can't be the only one. I'm at like, not saying I'm at the top of this game, but you're like, I know my software, I know Excel, I know Tableau. I should be able to do this with my expertise, and yet I'm still having a problem.
Exactly. So I was out there Googling, you know, watching YouTube videos, trying to figure out who had the inside knowledge on how to visualize survey data, right? And there was really nobody out there. There's one guy that spoke at the Tableau conference that talked about it a little bit, but like it was such a fresh topic. Like, data visualization in general is new, and then you bring in market research, which is not the most techie field, you know what I mean? Like, nobody was doing it. So I was like, all right, perfect. Like, I got a headache. I see like nobody's really in it. It's a growing trend. All right, I'm gonna jump on it, right? And I probably should have did more market research myself, but I jumped on it, right? And I was developing it, just, you know, doing my consulting company and developing this on the side for a couple of years. And then I launched it this year, and I got to the point where it was like, all right, I don't know anything about market research because I knew the product was good because I knew people would pay me to get these dashboards for them, but I haven't figured out how to package it correctly. I was just kind of throwing darts at a board, like, oh, well, maybe I can package it this way, or maybe I should go after this group or go after this group. without knowing the industry is really hard to know how to go after them if it's not you. You know what I mean? So I know,
like who's your customer? Like, you know what I mean? Like, is that
like, where do they live?
The e-commerce manager that's like been in charge of like getting surveys together, yeah. Or is it, you know, the CMO? Like, who's that customer? Exactly. And how do you get them to know that they need it?
Who has the budget also? Because, you know, I know plenty of people that could use it, but, you know, I'm trying to make money off of it too. So you know, the whole mixture of it. So now this year has been kind of that learning curve of all right, how do I sell it? Who do I sell it to? Who's the most powerful? Like trying to figure all that out, which to me is not bad because I'm learning on the go. You know, I saw opportunity, I jumped on it. You know, I built a whole survey software where, you know, I got marketing people and software developers and legal talking to lawyers to get, you know, like terms and conditions. So, you know, I learned a lot from it. So I'm not mad. Even if I don't sell it, I'm not mad, you know, because there's so much I learned from it that I can apply to whatever my next software is. But still it's, you know, I'm adapting, I'm trying to be agile, I'm trying to figure it out, and I'm just moving and just kind of going wherever, you know, the river takes me. But if I did it again, I would, you know, do a little more research and try to figure out what that market is before, instead of kind of doing it on the go. But I mean, you know, when you get an idea, you run with it, you know?
You're like, look, I got the software done. Now yeah. I just like, okay, I would have done, you know, this first before I got there.
Exactly.
But I don't really feel like there's a better way. Honestly, like I think everyone has different skill sets. Like I'm someone that runs into the burning building to save lives. Like,
yeah.
And think about it later. Like, you know, that everyone has their own thing. Like I'm a trailblazer. I don't even think that much of it because that's who I naturally am. And I'm just like, well, I don't know if I'm going to figure something out. I have to just go do it. And then, you know, I'll figure it out. And other people are like, what? That's crazy. Like, yeah. You know, how are you not going to think through this? I'm like, just like, well, if I do that, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, not for sure.
You know, if I'll think myself to death. Yeah. So, I mean, I commend that in a lot of ways. And, you know, some people I like to talk about failures on the show.
Yeah.
But I can't really think of that many. Like, you know, is it the, you know, the $1,500 I got scammed out of like a couple months ago? Is that a failure? Yeah. Is it, you know, overpaying this vendor, underpaying, mm-hmm. You know, I overpaid a vendor that I like didn't need to pay. And I'm like, okay, is that a failure? Is that a mistake? You know, or is that, I don't know, I need to bless them a little bit. Right. Yeah. So like, I have my own way of thinking about things, even our project, right? Like I probably spent several grand working with you trying to get a dashboard when no one was doing this, you know? And that's something I've been doing in my business for years. I'm going on year six. I've been spending money in areas to learn, because that's my tuition cost. That's my further education cost. That's, you know, I literally trashed what we did together, not because it was trash, but because it wasn't automation. And I didn't want to be uploading, you know, multiple Excels for all these clients. And then a simple software came along that was $29.99 a month, and it did a basic version of what we were trying to do. We were doing all types of stuff with showing where orders were placed across the globe and, you know, some fun stuff like that. But this little program came out, you know, and I was just like, swallowed that pride.
We should
swallow that. And it's like, mm-hmm, right. We should have, but at the same time, it was like, look, I learned what I needed. I learned that I needed automation. Yeah, for sure. I didn't need something that I was uploading Excels, you know, manually for. I like, you know, I learned quite a bit what the next thing was that I needed. And where can people find, you know, should they just contact you at your website? You know, if there is anyone listening that has surveys in their business or uses them often, and like, you know, a visualization for that part of their business would be helpful. You know, how do people find the software that you built?
Yeah, it's visualsurvey.com. So visual.com. So Tableau Consulting is visual intelligence consulting, and then Visual Survey is a software as a service that allows you to analyze any type of questionnaire, product feedback, survey data in a Tableau dashboard easily.
Awesome. And yeah, for anyone watching us on live or later on YouTube or Facebook, I have Tyler's website up here on the screen, visualintelligenceconsulting.com. You know, if you guys didn't get that survey site where you guys can find that software, I'm sure you can contact him here too, and he'll pull you up. That's, you know, that's something that at a high level, I'm almost scared, you know, to implement is surveys in a lot of ways. But I've worked with a lot of businesses that it's a big part of what they do. And I would like to think that I get a lot of mine still relationally, because we're a small enough, you know, team and agency that I'm connecting with people individually. But something really important, and I can't overstate, you know, this is, our sponsor today is fullscale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. And Matt, one of the founders of that company, Matt DeCourcy, as my mentor, is always telling me, you know, automation. You know, I'm in a service-based industry. I've always felt like it's quality and relationship that gets you business and keeps business. And so, you know, kind of old school in that way, but I'm learning every single day how important automation is, and scaling, and what software, and when to change and what to find. Always looking for ways to take what I'm doing and automate it. These are problems for everybody. So, you know, Dash Applications, I was on this podcast before, not to keep bringing that one up, but one thing he said that was huge was they were the first company in this space to focus on what agencies or what brands need instead of these individual sellers, which is what a lot of these tools are for, these individual sellers. So even when there's something in the space, there's always that next thing that someone else needs.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something that we still might need to get together. I got some things in the fire that I'm working with that I'd love to run by you and just see, you know, if there's any alignment there.
Yeah.
Sure. But a huge topic. What's the word I'm looking for? Sorry, I'm drawing blanks, but a huge focus of mine as I close out 2020 and into 21 is dashboards, automation, scaling the parts of my business that can be scaled.
Yeah.
How to keep my team lean and mean, you know, as we go into the new year. And one reason I want to do that is honestly pay. I want to be able to pay my people more. And to do that, I can't just hire more team members. I need to automate some of that kind of stuff. And so I'm literally thinking about automation, and dashboard management in order to pay my people more, to then deliver more on the service and relational side, you know, because they're more vested here as well. So that's at least my thinking, in regards to why I'm focusing on these areas.
No, for sure. I mean, most companies that make the most money, they don't have the most people, right? They have a whole bunch of,
right,
of computers and everything else doing most of the work, and just the creative people are there. So yeah, that's definitely it.
Yeah, I think the pandemic has changed the focus a little bit from tech only, because it's so scalable, to product-based business like e-commerce, like, you know, where I focus in. So I'm glad there's a little bit of shift there. But whenever you're making that shift, you know, that focus is still like, how do you get that done quickly and easily? Like, it's not, there's a reason everyone's been focused on the tech space, and it's because it is so scalable, you know? So how can I take that to the service-based side is still something that I'm pondering every single day and trying to find those areas. We talked a little bit about this software. You know, we've talked about your dashboard company, visualizations, and let's dig in a little bit deeper to like some of those things to avoid, you know, if you're building a software and launching it outside of market research. You talked about lawyers and figuring all that kind of stuff out. Like, what did you not know when you were like, I'm going to solve this with a software?
So, I mean, the software was all automation, right? Because I was doing everything manually, right? And yeah, I could do it manually, but it just, like I said, it was just a tedious thing. So I put all the logic, all my brain power into the software to automate it. Now, once I had the software, I was using it internally, and then it got to the point of, all right, now I need to make this so the public can use it, right? I like kind of having control of things, so. So like I was running my consulting company and I was building a whole software company on the side. But of course, you know, I outsourced everything. So, you know, I went on Upwork, right? I got full-time software developer. I got a marketing person. I hired the lawyer to do the terms and conditions. I hired a graphic designer. I hired, you know, website developer. And I didn't hire him full-time. I just hired him, you know, for the hours. But, you know, I worked with him and I was kind of like just a project manager of it, just giving him ideas and doing this and that like that. And I mean, that was a huge learning experience itself, just, you know, learning a little bit of everything to be able to kind of get a whole software company off the ground, you know,
a team.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, that, like I said, that was powerful just in itself, you know? And I mean, it took a little bit of time because, like I said, I was still working on my other company, you know, which was the one that put the money to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So if I didn't have another company, you know, I wouldn't be able to build this because I didn't have the money to do it. So, you know, doing that, and I would say some of the things that to watch out for is just, I mean, people in general, just finding the right person. So like when I hire someone, I usually like, I'll hire four people and I'll have them four people do the same exact thing. And then whoever does the best, that's the one. And I'll pay them, of course, to do it. But whoever does the best, that's the one I'll get. And then maybe six.
I like it.
I'll have that person do something, and I'll have four new people do something. And then I'll kind of gauge what that person is there. Because, especially if you're outsourcing overseas, you know, everything is cheaper. So you might have that little bit of overhead, or, you know, overhead in the beginning, hiring four people to do one thing. And of course you pick the task to do, but you want to make sure it's a task that they use their problem solving, their creativity, their innovation, you know, but that's stuff you can't teach. Right. Right. So that's what you're looking for. But you can't just pick, like, in my opinion, you can't just pick one person. Like you have to see what they can do and see how they think, see how they're creative and how they solve problems, and, or like, can they not do or figure out something without them asking you every single thing, you know, every day, like, well, what happens if? I'm like, yeah, figure it out yourself. Like, that's why I'm hiring you. Right. I would do it myself. So finding that, you know, those people, and it's a little bit of a learning process, but, you know, once you get those people, you know, those people do all across all my companies, they do this stuff for me. So you find the right people. And it's just a learning process. You learn on the go the whole time. But like I said, I make sure I know at least a little bit, you know. I don't go in just blind. Like if I'm hiring a graphic designer, I'll go on Udemy and take a graphic design course just so I got an idea of what's going on, so I could talk to them. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
So I'll go in and I learned a little bit about WordPress. I learned a little bit about this, you know, just learn a little bit enough to talk to them. But like, well, can't you do something like this? They're like, oh yeah, I could do something like, you know, like be able to at least speak to them, or else you just like just in there blind. Like, I don't know what's going on. You know what I mean? And then on top of that, take some of their knowledge, you know, like, well, how did you do this? You know, record that screen when you do this so I can see how you did it, you know, mm-hmm. Paying them, you might as well learn from them too. Right. So it's just a whole learning process of doing all that. And it's just, you know, being agile and flexible while you're doing it, but it's a great learning process. I mean, like you said, it's my college, right? You know, I went to college and didn't learn shit, in my opinion. Everything that I think is valuable that I know now is from YouTube and learning, you know, learning on the go. So, it's kind of the process that I took to go in, and it's like, it's all just learning.
Yeah. For me, a big part of that is like, if someone hasn't even put in the effort to like Google or YouTube or do any kind of like research on it at all, yeah. It's like a huge red flag to me, because there's so much knowledge out there. If I would much rather even them have wrong knowledge and come to me with that, like that they have something, and then let me talk to that, versus just coming with nothing.
Not for sure.
You know, that's the big thing that Fullscale.io does, and they might be a good plug for you as well, Tyler. Fullscale.io, they help you build teams overseas, right? So the thing here is that it takes out that needing to hire four people. Because they've already been vetted. So it's kind of the best of the talent. They have a project manager, you know, that's helping them, stay on task, dedicated to you. If you have any issues, you're talking to that project manager that's then talking to your team. I mean, then you can start talking directly to them too as well. And I'm a customer. So I, you know, I've used them for graphic design. I've used them for content, a bunch of different things. Just kind of takes out that they're, you know, it takes out that going out there and finding those people and keeping them, you know, connected for you. And for a lot of companies that have, you know, high end development needs, it's a big win, you know. And a lot of people that are thinking about whether it's virtual assistants or using someone like Fullscale.io, and you're like, I don't know how I feel about, you know, using talent overseas. To that person, I would say, like, you know, without to do that, I wouldn't have been able to hire people here in Kansas City. You know, it's like, it doesn't matter who's doing what. It's about building you know, a company that's sustainable and that's going to be profitable and that can continue to pay people here what they're worth, you know, and bring business back into the city. It's do whatever it takes. When you're a real entrepreneur, it's do whatever it takes to get it done. And to, you know, to anyone that's like, I don't know about VAs, that kind of thing. You know, I question whether, how much they care about getting it done, you know? So, you know, to them, it's an alignment.
like my mom was looking for a job and I was like, you know what, just go on Indeed, save all the jobs. I'll have a virtual assistant apply for all of them. like I use a VAs in all aspects of life. You know what I mean?
I love it. I love it.
If it's something that could be, you know, automated or somebody else can do, I'm not wasting my time. You know, I'll have somebody else do it. Cause you know, I'm trying to do something else with my time. And that's a big thing. Being an entrepreneur is you want to do everything. You want to, you know, you tackle all the little things and you got to prioritize what's important and what's not, or else you'll be stuck doing just little stuff that's not worth anything, you know? And that's, I had a hard time doing that because I'm like, man, let me just do this. I could do this real quick. And I could do this real quick. And it's just like, well, like whatever was generating me money, I stopped doing, you know?
Yeah.
So learning how to delegate is really hard being especially a solo entrepreneur. But once you can delegate and get all, you know, like you said, automate your processes and then get people doing the stuff that you don't actually have to do, then you can focus more on the value, you know, value added stuff.
Exactly. I was talking to a client today and, you know, he just, you know, we were having a conversation about taking on his Europe accounts and, you know, the conversation was flowing in a way that was just like, you know, I just want to make sure, like, you know, you're still plugged in and, you know, you're still focused and running my business, like as if you're running it yourself. Cause that's how we are in Marknology. We're very high touch and I'm in the weeds, like, you know, and, you know, I reassured him. I said, hey, I have to rely on my team. That's why I built the team. You know, I don't want to be uploading coupons and photos and, you know, things that I don't have to be doing, but I will spend hours helping you find the right partner, you know, for whether it's translations or off Amazon advertising or, you know, anything to do. And that's my value, right? That's where I can bring the most value to my clients is, you know, figuring out how to do the things that someone else can do or do better than me. And the same reason I hired you for the dashboards, right? I can do a lot and I've taught myself a lot. And it was something that I was like, no, this is a bit of an art. And I'm going to hire somebody to do it. Honestly, like, you know, there's a lot in my business I've done myself. There's a few things I've hired out, you know, and you just got to find out what, you know, what you're good at. Yep. 100%. I said, I've been patting myself on the back, the last couple of weeks. Cause I'm still learning that, you know, as someone from the bottom, so to speak, you know, self-made, like, you know, at one point you're just grabbing any opportunity that's there and you're like, oh, I can make a dollar. Oh, I can make a dollar. Oh, I can make a dollar. You know, and you're just grabbing opportunity. And especially if you like helping people, you're grabbing opportunities and helping people. And it becomes just kind of this thing that you like, you know, but to become a second stage business, to grow past a team of 12 or wherever I'm at, you know, I have to change the way I've done things. Yeah. You know, I have to change the way I've done things in the past. And you know, I've said no to 5 or 6 clients in the last 2 weeks, cause I just didn't think they were a great fit or not the right size or, any number of reasons. And for me, I know that that's a level, you know,
so sometimes I just don't like them. I'm like, I don't really want to work with you.
Yeah. Like, I mean, exactly. Like you contacted me, right? Like,
Yeah, exactly.
No, and as you get a little bit older, at least in regards to business, you start to see that, you know, in the same way as if you went on a date and you would know if you're hitting it off or you'd know if you weren't, you know, all the way through the process. And it's not, you know, I'm not trying to get anyone's money for that one time pay of a month or 2 months or 3 months, whatever, you know, I'm trying to keep them, you know, as a client for Marknology. So it's like, look, if this isn't going to work out anyway, then just say no now.
Yeah.
You know, it's a skill though. If you are a hustler from the bottom, I'm telling you, no is not in your vocabulary. Like you're just like, yeah, I'll do it. Like, you know, yeah, I can do it. So like learning that, being able to say no, or like, hey, I need someone else. This isn't for me, I think is absolutely huge. Let's switch gears just a little bit. You know, digital.
Can I put my phone on the charger? Is it beeping at me?
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
One second.
For anyone that's you know, watching it on the live, we had a little bit of struggles getting plugged in. Tyler's computer wasn't working. We've got a phone. He's like got it up on a stand. We've got this thing all worked out. to talk to you guys today. So bear with us. I do want to talk about digital nomads for anybody listening. And for anyone that doesn't know what that means, a digital nomad is just someone that, it's a play on an old word, which is nomad, which is just someone that doesn't really have a home and is, you know, always on the go. And the digital part is just being able to work from your computer anywhere in the world. And I know that that is a big, driving, I wouldn't say I want to be a nomad. I like having a home, but I love to travel. I love working abroad. I know tons of careers that have popped up. I have friends all over the world that are, you know, living their dreams, working abroad. My dad was a missionary in Africa growing up. And I'm so grateful looking back now, thinking that what I do wasn't an option when he was trying to, you know, live abroad and travel and do things like that. Like, he couldn't just have a computer and work a job from Africa or things like that to support the family. And, my dad, I'm also thankful because my dad had one of the very first computers and was teaching me, you know, how to put computers together when I was just a little kid. And I've used that skill to now give me the ability to, you know, travel abroad. And me and my sister, you know, we call the whole world's my workplace, or, you know, travel abroad. And you see these like programs and things, and there's nothing that makes me, I don't know, feel a little bit more excited about life than when I'm in control of my work environment, or I'm just burnt out here and I'm like, I'm going to be working from a coffee shop in New York or Italy, or, you know, it's a major, major, major driving force for me and my motivation to
take freedom, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. The sense of freedom and choice, right? For me, I love the word freedom, but I'm not sure a lot of people describe it the same way I do. So for me, freedom is choice. The ability to choose, do I want to work? Do I not want to work? Do I want to be here? Do I want to be there? Do I want to, you know, eat this or eat that, you know? And maybe I have my own choices, but it becomes mine to make, right? And when it's yours to make, it's surprising to see how motivating that is, right? Yeah. Where are you at right now?
Right now I'm in Texas. So I just moved back to the U.S. Last year. I was backpacking for about a year in Central America. And then in February, right when COVID started, I decided to come back to the U.S. for a little bit.
That's awesome.
I started the digital nomad thing is back when. So this was 2015 or so. I moved to Atlanta. So I'm originally from California, and I went to Texas and Nashville and Atlanta. And I was sitting in Atlanta, you know, I had a basement, I had my office down there, right? A whole bunch of monitors everywhere. And I'm just grinding all day, every day, right? And this is the beginning of my company. So I started making, you know, some decent money, started buying, you know, I bought a boat, bought some dirt bikes, bought, you know, a motorcycle, bought a whole bunch of cars, but I'm sitting here working all day, right? And then one day I'm just sitting here and I'm just looking at my bills and I'm just like, damn, how do I make good money? But like, I'm just sitting here stressing about money. You know what I mean? It's true. It's like, and me, like growing up, like in college, I'm reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I'm reading a lot of those entrepreneur types here, and like, you know, Dave Ramsey and all that. So like, I already knew the whole rat race and getting caught in it, right? But I'm sitting here in my office, like just looking at all these bills, stressing about money. And I'm just like, how the hell did I get caught in this? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I don't even need none of this stuff. I don't even use none of it, right? So then it was literally like, I already had my kid. She was like three at the time. My ex-wife was pregnant, and she was like 7 months pregnant. And I'm just sitting there like, I got to get the hell out of here. So within 2 months, I sold everything I owned. Me, my ex-wife, she's pregnant, 8 months pregnant, and my three-year-old, we jumped and just moved to Mexico. Never did anything. We had two suitcases each. I was like, that's all we thought. We sell everything, get rid of everything, and we go to Mexico. And we moved to Playa del Carmen, which is right by Cancun. And then I've been living, you know, in Central America the last 5 years. But I mean, like for me, the sense of like freedom is just like, just getting all that, the pressure you get here, you know, just trying to compete with everyone, and oh, you got a nice car, shit, I gotta get a nice car, like, you know, it's just that pressure is just like, man, I just got to the point where I'm out of here. So then that's when I started kind of the digital nomad thing. And I mean, since I had a family, it was not the full digital nomad aspect. I called it slow traveling. You know, we had a home base in Playa del Carmen. And then we, every 3 months or so, we would go to another country for like a month, and then we'll come back to our home base. So we kind of used it, you know, I call it the slow digital nomad, you know, approach. But I mean, just that experience was great. Just, you know, learning different cultures, seeing how different people think, you know, like people that, you know, in America is just like, we think the world revolves around us. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then when you go to other countries, you know, you see like, you're like, hey, y'all don't celebrate Thanksgiving? Like, you just say stupid stuff, right? like, what the hell is Thanksgiving? You know what I mean? But you think like, oh, everybody celebrates Thanksgiving, right? So like, just going to live in different countries and talking, like, it just really opens your mind, you know, with different
opens things. It.
And that's helped me a lot. And we're talking about failures earlier. So I moved to Playa del Carmen, and just Mexico culture is just different than the U.S. culture in general, right? And I'm thinking, all right, there was trying to find an apartment. I'm looking around. There's no Trello or apartments.com or nothing, right? Everything is you walk down the neighborhood and you look for signs, right? And
there's walls, there's barbed wire. It's like,
man, this is not efficient at all. Like, I'm tired of riding my bicycle around looking for an apartment, right? So I started developing like a Trello.com, but for Playa del Carmen, right? So I built it. I had the graphic designer, the web, like building this whole thing. And I'm going around, you know, hiring people locally because it's cheap, of course, and trying to, you know, get people to put their apartments and stuff on the website, right? And I mean, the website was nice. Like, it was customized for the city. So it had like places of interest and different things for like expats to go in and figure out, you know, where they want to live. But this was one of the things where I didn't understand the culture, right? Mm-hmm. And the culture in Mexico is, I'd rather work 10 hours than save $2. You know what I mean? Like, they're not big on efficiency as if like Americans are. Like, I want to save these minutes. You know what I mean? Where in Mexico, I want to save the money. So it's just a different culture of yeah, this might save me time, but I don't want to spend the money for it. Compared to the U.S., is all about being efficient, right? So there was that culture difference that I didn't understand. That kind of just like, oh damn, like, I mean, they rather, you know, not be efficient and save $5 than be efficient, you know. And it's nothing wrong with it. It's just understanding the culture. You know what I mean?
Right.
And when you start doing stuff in international markets without knowing the culture, you're just not, you know, you're just doing it based off of what Americans would do, but that's not what that country would do, you know? So that was something I learned. And yeah, I mean, I lost some money in it, but it was a huge learning experience. And now I'm thinking internationally about different cultures and stuff and how they think. And also that helps a lot with outsourcing because, you know, when you deal with people in India and different in Eastern Europe and all that, right? It's not everyone. I'm not doing a generalist, you know, but you know, they behave differently than Americans, right? Like, you know, in like India and stuff, they want like exact directions of how to do something usually, right? Where like Americans don't really want to give you exact directions, you know? And that's where like a lot of people that outsource get frustrated because they're like, well, like, you know, figure it out on your own. Like, I don't want to do this. So there's certain things where you just have to understand the culture and understand, you know, what they're good at and what they're just used to. Not saying they can't change or not, but that's just what they're used to, you know what I mean? But once you understand that and accept that, and then you kind of delegate based off of that, it gets a lot easier and it makes more sense. But if you try to treat someone, you know, in a different culture, like you would in this culture, that's where you bump heads and you feel like, oh no, it doesn't work. You know, it's just something's wrong. Like, no, your work sucks. This is just, they think differently. They see differently just because their culture is different. So learning that is a huge thing. And like I said, that's why, at least I found a lot of people are scared out is because the cultural difference and they don't understand how to work with them and how to talk with them. And because they're treating them like they would treat an employee in the US, you know what I mean? So that's a good learning experience as well.
Mic drop. Yeah. Like, I mean, as someone that grew up in Africa and travel a lot, like, I'm so blessed, you know, to have that perspective. And, you know, it just changes the game. You know, like, I have such a hard time relating with Americans growing up abroad. Like, I have such a hard time relating with Americans that are whiny. You know, I just am like, you all don't know shit about shit. like, you know, and I find myself gravitating to people that are from other places or, you know, have some of that perspective because, you know, for me, I'm like thankful for three jobs there, you know, like because you have that culture. Right. Yeah. And another big one is respect. Like you have to like give respect more of a priority when you're dealing with other cultures. It's the number one thing that they operate their lives around. You know, they're very like, at least when I've been to Central America, South America, Africa, respect is very much a priority. And, you know, and I'm not saying Americans don't have it. I'm just saying like, you know, we have a lot of different cultures here. Americans are not one culture. It's a mixture of all the cultures of the world. We got 50 states that are really like 50 countries, like, you know, so it's crazy, but you have to be able to get outside your perspective of a thing, you know, to be able to be able to not just live abroad, but work with, you know, outsourced talent and be able to communicate effectively with them. And sure, I don't have all of the cultures down, but I have a general understanding that there's a difference.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and be
sure.
Right. And find what culture you connect well with and, you know, continue working with those people. You know, I have a dream for sure for me that's like, you know, I want to own Airbnbs abroad. One of my own. Yeah. It's called AKC Co Properties here in Kansas City. We have about 70 properties. You know, 25 of them are Airbnbs or so. And I would love to own one in Mexico, Bogota, Medellin, you know, just, yeah. You know, whether it's the time zone or the weather, like you know, we got winter coming up and I hate it. I'm African inside. So I'm like, I just hate the cold. And, you know, there's so many ways to be free in 2020, you know, to live abroad, travel abroad, work abroad. And for me, for anyone listening, that's like, I want that. I want what Tyler has. I want what Andrew has. Maybe it's a founder, someone that's not a founder that's listening. Like, mine started with the smallest quality of life improvements. You know, yeah. I wanted to not lose 2 hours a day in traffic. Mm-hmm. I wanted those 2 hours back, you know, and those 2 hours allowed me to justify going to the gym more. And, and it took away that 2 hours of negativity a day. Not that every drive is negative. Some can be positive, but traffic sucks. And, you know, then it started to, well, I want to be able to work from home. You know, I don't want to have to wear this monkey suit,
yeah.
You know? And so then it was like, okay, what kind of jobs can I get in where I don't have to wear this monkey suit?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just little intentionality around the things that made me feel more free or have more choice that ended up where I am today. But I definitely didn't start out trying to get here personally, you know, and
it's so easy with COVID. I mean, everybody's working from home. You know what I mean? Like it, more than likely, most people are not going back to office just because the company's going to still, you know, they already put all this to place. They'll just save on commercial real estate and it's going to be a cost right. savings to them and everything's more productive and all that. So like, you don't even have to own your own company to work remote. You know what I mean? So you
yep.
remote, why, like, what's the difference of you working home right now and working on the beach? Like, nobody knows any difference. All right. And my clients never knew where I was. I mean, I would tell them if they're friends or stuff, but they don't know where I was. My company was, you know, based in the US and I was wherever I was as long as I had internet. You know, I was chilling, taking phone calls on the beach with no shirt on and swim trunks. And you know, as soon as they get off, I'm going surfing, you know, like they have no, mm-hmm. And then there's no stopping. Like it's super easy to do it. I mean, there's that, of course, that initial jump of being scared. But I mean, if you think about it just financially, like one, it's a cost of living adjustment. It's just ridiculously different, you know what I mean? Where I can buy here compared to there is like 1/10 of the cost. Plus it's going to be way nicer, you know. You know, the lifestyle is better. You got the outdoor stuff. Like I said, I lived in the Caribbean, so I was scuba diving all the time. I was going wakeboarding. I was chilling on the beach. I would work half the day, go to the beach, get a massage, come back, you know, for $10. And it's just so easy to do it. And then on top of that, you get tax benefits from being out there, especially if you're like a consultant, because there's the foreign earned income exclusion. So you get tax benefits. So you save money on cost of living. On top of you save taxes, and you get to live like a king, essentially. Like I said, I would have came back if it wasn't for COVID. But you know, being a gringo out there when they got no money because the tourism is not the safest route when you got kids, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
But yeah, it's super easy. It's just making that initial jump, and you'll see how easy it is.
Well, I'll definitely be coming down to Mexico when you're back and saying
tomorrow. So
are you going tomorrow?
Yeah, I got a flight to Cancun tomorrow.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm going for Halloween.
Awesome. I love it. And he's probably. Are you going to stay or just back to visit?
Just back to visit. Yeah, yeah. For Day of the Dead, Halloween. It's a pretty fun time out there during those times.
Oh, I bet. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
But you know, the same reasons you just mentioned are the same reasons I've stayed in Kansas City here in the U.S. was cheaper cost of living than a lot of places. Mm-hmm. You know, ability to keep costs down. It's like, you know, the Midwest is really affordable in regards to like all the other areas of the country, and it allows me to travel more by being here, my family based here, you know, keeping costs of real estate and you know, having our office and things like that down. I live with a roommate, Brian. He's the one that helps me with my real estate, you know, that business together. Intentional. Why? Because I wanted to keep costs down so that I can travel. Like I focused so many areas around my life based on, you know, being able to work abroad, travel abroad, and the world's getting more global, you know, and you talked about that, that culture in Mexico that you didn't know, you know, and that's something that I'm actually digging into right now. I literally was on a call, actually yesterday, but it was Europe. So this is just like some strange time zones, but,
yeah.
They help with localization, translating listings on Amazon. So not just translating them, but getting it localized. So using localized, you know, verbiage and terminology to sell products. So I'm starting to learn and try to find connections that can help me localize products and really understand what's going on. You know, Amazon Mexico is a big marketplace. And even to be a businessman, it helps me to know how those cultures think, you know, and what they're doing and what's going on. Tyler, are you still with me? Seen him go a little bit vertical for anyone's listening, but we'll see if he comes back. But I mean, all in all, like absolutely everything we're talking about on this episode, I think I got him back, Tyler, but everything we've been talking about, you know, as an entrepreneur, whether it's lessons spending to learn, whether it's, you know, being able to see your data so that you can make decisions, whether it's knowing when to ask for help or when to say no, you know, when to hire an expert versus, you know, when to outsource something, when to do it yourself. This is all like entrepreneurship stuff 101. And while I wish I knew it at the beginning, you still learn it every single year. There's something you're doing that you need to say no to or something that, you know, that you need to outsource. Tyler, we definitely have to connect offline. I don't want to tell my ideas on air, but I got some big ones for, you know, some ways I think visualization could really help a project I'm working on kind of bring it to the next level. So that'll be fun. And you guys stay tuned. I know we have a lot of listeners, and I think this idea is going to be huge for e-commerce. So maybe we'll be talking that idea the next time we get on the show. Once again, guys, you can always find Tyler online. I'm going to put his website up here for anyone going live, visualintelligenceconsulting.com. That's visual with a Z, V-I-Z-U-A-L, intelligenceconsulting.com. Thanks again to our sponsor, Fullscale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. We talked about the leverage and power of outsourcing, whether you're hiring four at a time and figuring out the best one, or you're just going with a company like Fullscale and having them help you pick the right developers for your needs. You know, outsourcing is a great way to scale your team and allow you to get into those areas that you need to automate and things like that. Tyler, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, no problem, man. Appreciate you having me.
Yeah, still got him here. We'll have him back again, that's for sure. Everybody take care. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks, man.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.